Yeah, thank you for the opening and prophecy has been one of those things that I've thought a fair bit about or wondered about it, because I know there's a lot of places that make it sound fairly simplistic, kind of one who just proclaims the right message, but then there's kind of examples that make me think, oh, it's often more than that. But I don't have it all figured out. It's probably not just reduced to one or even two little things. I think it's a recent message that Finney gave. I think it's titled something like not discovering, but reviving, maybe something like reviving prophecy in the church. It kind of sparked my interest. I don't listen to a whole lot of his messages, but it kind of sparked my interest because over the years that would have often been like the one thing, like, of the gifts and stuff that it mentions. Like, if it talks about the gift of tongues, like, I just don't have much understanding of that, and there's passages that make me think it just simply means languages, but then there's passages I can't quite make sense out of it just meaning a language, but I don't have that much thought about it or desire for it. What about healing, like the gift of healing? A little more, like that would be nice to see some of those more miraculous healings. But even that I don't desire as greatly as I would like some of the abilities for prophets to speak into like present day situations with like a message from scripture. Anyway, back to that message. I listened to that message. I don't know. There's definitely a few things I don't care that much for that he said, but there was enough that I had actually had the thought of like, maybe I should send this out to the brothers and we should discuss like what part of this is something we should take a little more thought into. But now I'm just telling you, I guess, if you have interest, you can listen to it. We can still discuss it someday. But anyway, I appreciate what was shared, and I appreciate to realize the realization that it means something, and that it can mean something for us today, and that it includes proclaiming the new covenant message. So I'm thankful for that. For our discussion today, our study, we can look at 1 Peter chapter 2, start at verse 1, and I ask Brother Kompa to read verses 1 to 12. So after he's read those, you can just, if you have some thoughts on that, let's just have an open, just raise your hand and the mic will get passed, or go up front and share some any inspirations you have out of that passage.
1 Peter chapter 2. Wherefore, laying aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisies and envies and all evil speaking, as newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby. If so be ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious, to whom coming as unto a living stone, disallowed indeed of men, but chosen of God and precious, ye also as lively stones are built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Wherefore also it is contained in the Scripture, Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he that believeth on him shall not be confounded. Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner, and a stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word, being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation.
Yeah, thank you for reading that, Kumpa. There are the first few verses. Therefore, putting aside all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander. In verse 2, like newborn babies long for the pure milk of the word, so that by it you may grow in respect to salvation, if you have tasted the kindness of the Lord. One thought I had when I read that, and also in the first chapter, there's verses in there that could pertain to the same thing, but there's a progression to our salvation. There's a growing. Sometimes some of the thoughts that we talk about or get shared make things seem like there's just a snap of the fingers, which is also true. Say, like, 1 minute one is condemned, he repents, the next minute he's saved, yes. But there's also a continuance of being saved. There's a growing in salvation, as this verse seems to me to relatively plainly indicate. There's a growth that needs to happen, keeps happening, or needs to continue happening, so that we may grow in respect to salvation. And then maybe verse 9, but you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession. Why? So that you may proclaim the excellence of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. For you once were not a people, now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. So it kind of fits with the prophecy thing, proclaiming the good news, proclaiming the good news of now having received mercy and come into the light out of darkness, being a holy nation, a holy people for his own possession. So let's, I guess, remember that. We are those things so that we may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called us.
Yeah, there's a lot in this section, in this half a chapter we read, and appreciate what you brought out there, Brother Leroy, about those first few verses. verses 4, starting in verse 4, it says, "And coming to him as to a living stone, which has been rejected by men, but is choice and precious in the sight of God, you also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." And it goes on to say, for this is contained in the scripture, and he's quoting out of Isaiah, "Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone," or a choice stone, a precious cornerstone. As long as I can remember anyway, I've been fascinated with stone construction, stone buildings, stone structures, stone bridges. There in Ohio, where we come from, it was not uncommon. I mean, they were becoming uncommon as they eventually got tore out, but there were these, on smaller roads, there were these stone arches laid up for bridges. And there was no mortar involved or nothing. It was just dry stacked stone made in the right way to hold up the road and vehicles. And anyway, all kinds of... And then I guess maybe because I'm fascinated in it, I got into a little bit of stone construction, so I have a wee little bit of experience with that. But that cornerstone, like, the cornerstone is like the first stone that gets placed, and it's like the stone off of which everything else gets measured. Like, for example, let's suppose I got some empty chairs up here. If we were building a building, and we put that first stone there, and that's going to be the cornerstone, everything else is going to measure off of that. If we want everything else, even if we measure off of some other point to check it, it would always go back to that stone. Let's say we wanted a 10 by 10 building. You know, you can measure out 10 feet this way, and then you can measure off of that one 10 feet and end up somewhere here. And then you can measure 10 feet again, and you can actually have 10 feet from every chair, but the problem is it's not square. And so the way to figure that out is there's a certain measurement that one also has to be. And so you figure out, oh, these all have to move out, you know, this one has to come in to the right measurement, and you figure out. But everything always gets measured off of that first stone that gets laid. And even as you would go up then, you could then go 10 feet up, 10 feet up, but it could lean one way, but you could figure that out by measuring back to that stone, one way or another. Everything would always measure off of that cornerstone. And it's saying that's who Jesus is. And I think, you know, there's other stones in a structure that are also important. For instance, like if you're going to lay up an arch, there's that top stone is called the keystone, and it's a really important stone because it locks all the other ones in place. The rest of the stones in an arch would not stay there until you put the keystone in and it locks them all into place. Or there's a capstone. It'll be on the top of an open wall or a roof, and it'll shed water. It'll protect things. And all of those are important stones. In some ways, all of those capstones, keystones, could in some ways all be representative of Christ, but the scripture specifically says about this cornerstone, and I like the idea of how everything needs to be measured off of that. All of our lives, you know, we might have had a great father and a great a good godly father and a good godly grandfather. But if we're just going to run our lives off of them, we're not going to run true unless we tie back to the only cornerstone. Another thing I've thought about in relation to this passage is it says we are stones. Now we are all to be lively stones. And if there's any connection or anything to the temple that was built in the Old Testament, which I'm sure there is plenty to get from that, there was no on the temple site where the real temple was being built. There was no hammer, no chisel, no cutting. When the stones came there, they fit. And I think the reason is not that the stones weren't chiseled and hammered. They just weren't chiseled and hammered at the building site. That all happened at the quarry. And at the quarry, you know, people chiseled rocks out and they set them beside each other and they rubbed them with each other and made sure they fit with each other and then they sent them to the temple site. And I kind of think that's like we're in the quarry right now. We're being rubbed with our brothers and sisters and we're being fitted and chiseled if we allow it, if we're lively stones. And the Lord is taking those stones as he takes them home, I guess. There's a sense in which this temple is being built right now with us, but still I think ultimately what he's doing is shaping, having us shaped and chiseled now to be set on that day when the chiseling time is over and the shaping time is over and the stones that have been fitted will fit together and be that eternal temple. It's too much to read, or I guess I feel like it's too much to read. I'd rather have other brothers share thoughts, but if you ever get a chance, look up what a writing that the Shepherd of Hermas wrote about. It's like a very big expansion of this passage where he was talking. An angel showed him this vision of the temple being built. And he saw all these different kinds of stones, where they came from, people dragging them there, some being used, some being set aside because they weren't ready yet, some being thrown out altogether, some having cracks. And Hermas asks this angel what the meaning of all these stones were. And it's pretty amazing. There's a lot there to learn. It's like a 13 chapter, not long chapters, but it's a little too much reading for what I want to do now, but I encourage you to read it sometime.
Thank you, Brother Dwayne, and Leroy, your comments too. I asked Brother Dwayne, it must have been 5-6 years ago, so Wednesday night, Bible study in your front yard. I mean, it was the summertime in your backyard, and I asked a question and show you my intelligence. I said, yeah, so what is a living stone? You get a doctor gets a stonemason. I asked you something. You probably forget it. I've said so many foolish things. But I said, with a doctor, he puts a stethoscope on him, and he goes up to a stone and sees if he can hear a heartbeat, a living stone. I said, I remember I asked you that. And he says, what is a living stone? How can you tell if it's living or dead? You know, you get a stethoscope and put it on the like a tree surgeon. You know, you just put it on the rock and you're waiting for a heartbeat or something. But I remember you just was saying that it's not worth answering. But anyway, some of the it isn't. But anyway, the living stone. I know for talking to Catholic people, you know, him being the key, Peter is the stone. But no, his brother Reynold, which Peter said that there's living stones. The next thing was. Was it rejected? So Christians are going to be rejected. It's rejected. You're a living stone, you're rejected. You're precious means you're valuable, very valuable in God's eyes. And the last one, if Brother Daniel's not here, maybe you can, down in Honduras, it says, in Schneider, it said that, how does it say, Daniel Prada? And the stone is going to crush others, or it's going to roll, and that's talking about, it's in the book of Daniel, right? When Christ, like Brother Al, it was in Daniel 2:44, like that, when that stone is going to, it's not made, how does it say it? It's cast down,
made of human hands.
No, maybe human hands, right, that's Christ, and he's going to destroy Yeah, the Lord be magnified. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I had not read this chapter, but interesting to what I was studying, actually has some points. Because I was reading Daniel 2, and I came across verse 44, and I realized how uncommon it is for a stone to crush. It crushed that image that was made of harder things, composites like iron. You know, throw a rock at iron, it usually just ricochets, it doesn't. But this rock was not a rock of that nature, I guess, because it shattered, you know, it shattered that image to pieces, even though it was made up of harder substance. And it became a mountain, it says, and it was an everlasting, considered an everlasting kingdom, everlasting rock. So, I guess it was the living rock. Yeah, that rock became the offense. When Dwayne was making his analogy with those chairs about meshing off of it, I think the issue with how it was a stumbling block was that other people wanted to measure off of other things, and that's why he was a rock of offense, because people had their own measuring sticks rather than using this rock to measure off of. And that still holds today. Just people don't like to take Jesus as their measuring stick. They want to go with something else. Just name it, like different ideas. Got to measure off Jesus.
I kind of like the thought was what Dwayne was talking about, the stones perfectly needing to be fit together at the quarry before it even got there. And it kind of reminded me of the this video I was watching about how these modern day people were trying to recreate a castle. And so they had to have the masons, that were able to lay the stone. They had to have the people down at the quarry chipping out the pieces and perfectly fitting them. And I remember there was one part in the video where it was talking about how challenging it is to make one of those perfectly fit spiral staircases that would go up to like the second floor or third floor, however, because if one little positioning was out of place, they would have had to take it back to the quarry and redo the whole thing. And they talked about how each stone, either one or two stones, would take a day or two just to chip it out and make it just right. Talk about how difficult that would be to pre-plan everything and then have to do that. And it was it kind of makes me think about like the representation of, well, take us for example, like we have people from all different kinds of backgrounds coming together. It's like, how hard is that to make work and fit together? Like, but if there's some way to make it work, it seems like God's the one that's able to make that happen. So don't, I guess, in the encouragement, don't get discouraged if we don't seem to make it work right away. Just keep trying.
My last comment, it would be my last comment. The word rock is used, and I'm getting this from Chuck Pike, Sister Michelle. Chuck Pike, this is Chuck Pike in his Types and Shadows, so I'm getting this from Chuck Pike. And I shared it with Comperandito, I think, but the word rock is used 100 times, maybe more, in the scriptures, Old and New. Yanni, and it means God, you know, the Psalms. It's a rock. The God of Israel is a rock. And Irenaeus, the early Christian, 180 A.D., he made a big thing out of this, and I just want to throw it out. Irenaeus said, well, first of all, Moses was forbidden. In 1 Corinthians 10, it says, "And the rock in the wilderness was Christ." So Irenaeus says this: when Moses was forbidden to enter the promised land because he did what? He hit the rock rather than speaking to the rock. And so Irenaeus says this, and I love the early Christians, I love Irenaeus, but he said this, that, well, you know, that's kind of a small thing to be nigh into the promised land. I mean, Moses, you know, God speaks to him face to face, and when Miriam and Aaron spoke about him. And I speak to him. He's my servant. And you, who do you? And so she got struck with leprosy. And so Moses, for that little thing of striking the rock rather than tapping it, you disobeyed me, and you're not going to enter the promised land. I know Irenaeus, I believe, says like that, or maybe it was Chuck too. Chuck Pike said it. And the thing was that Irenaeus said that that staff that Aaron, I mean, forgive me, that Moses hit the rock with was made out of wood, and wood represents the cross. And so Christ was only crucified once. And so when he hit it twice, the three times, it's crucifying the Lord again. I really know if I want to share this comment again, but is it true or not? That's good discussion while we're eating or something. Did when Moses was not allowed to enter the promised land because he struck it, was that striking Christ being crucified and it's wood on the stone? Dijon, you're not that old, but I know. Is that the reason he was denied the promised land? That's Irenaeus, and the Lord be magnified.
I didn't know Irenaeus wrote anything like that, but I've always thought there's something like... I think there's more than one lesson there, but I think there's something like that. I never even connected it with like the stick being wood or the cross as much as like there was a time early in their journey when he was supposed to hit the rock, right? He hit the rock and water came out. And then that last time it was supposed to be spoken to, and Christ came and was smitten. He came, but he came only once to be smitten, right? If we drink of that, you could say crucified Christ, we are to now commune with him, not have him smitten again. And commune meaning like in communication with him or speak to him or in. I think there's more lessons in it than that, but I do think that's one thing. I just didn't know Irenaeus wrote that.
Oh, there's a thing that scripture writers do sometimes, where they draw a comparison or a parallel and then kind of change it in the middle of it. It happens in the Proverbs often, where the thing that follows doesn't quite follow, and there's the author is making a point in intentionally making it not follow. A New Testament example is when it says that the unfaithful servant, it says, will have his part with the unbelievers. I don't know Greek, but it's just interesting. You'd think it would say the... What does it be, in the analogy of having faithful or unfaithful servants? What is where do believers come in? And like he just like jumps from an analogy of faithful and unfaithful servants to believers and unbelievers. It kind of changes subject, so to speak. And there's a point in there. Anyway, similarly, I noticed. Here, okay. Unto you, therefore, which believe, he is precious, but unto them which, you think he would say, unto them which don't believe, he's disallowed, etc. But it switches in a very peculiar way. Unto you that believe, he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient. Like, where did... So anyway, there's a point being made there, but in the relationship between believing and obeying. When Brother Kompa was a little boy, he drew, yeah, when he was littler of a boy, he drew this picture. He used to draw a lot of really neat, really creative pictures. Anyway, he drew one that just looked like a stone wall. He just drew little boxes. And they kind of all fit together. And in every little box, he drew a little smiley face. And I was like, what? What inspired this? And he didn't know. And I was like, that's prophetic. That's neat. Then I also noticed... you're a royal priesthood, holy nation, peculiar people, that you should show forth, and in Greek that means like proclaim abroad, the praises of him that hath called you. I didn't quite understand that, but that I don't know why they chose praises there, but the Greek says a virtuous course of thought, virtue or moral goodness, any particular moral excellence as modesty or purity. That's what this nation spreads abroad. Okay, and then back. Okay, a holy priesthood, verse 5, to offer up spiritual sacrifices. I mean, that's the duty of a priest. Whether it was, what was it, lamps or incense or animal sacrifices, things dealing with blood and fat and meat. Now we're supposed to do something. We're supposed to offer up spiritual sacrifices like a priest, which is just like this obligatory, like an obligation to, like that's my job, that's what I do. I keep the incense burning. It needs to be burnt. There needs to be incense constantly burning. It needs to always smell good, and you need to always see the smoke rising up. It's just because he's worthy. He's always worthy, and it needs to always be happening, and it's some guy's job. Put more incense. Make sure it doesn't burn out or whatever. And there's something that we're supposed to... I don't think really God really cares about. I think that was a shadow. I don't think God really cares about incense or animal meat. He cares about us being nice to each other. When we obey Jesus, it's like a priest offering a spiritual sacrifice, especially if it costs or hurts or is difficult.
You know, Dwayne, sometimes if those who poured a foundation for a house, if they messed it up, you can fix it with the chalk lines when you frame it. I thought that, but it's that same concept with like a cornerstone. I guess you can kind of have that square line you can measure off of. I've really been intrigued during the time when they built the temples, and in the times when they've repaired the temples, or they needed work done to it, they would call in these carpenters and these masons. These professional people would come. Or rather, they were a part of the city of Jerusalem. They were just among the people. And then I find it interesting. Paul calls himself a wise master builder, and like that's how we ought to be, like these priests, these master builders with like these different skills, and like building the kingdom. Like everyone has their different gifts. One verse here that has really, and I'm not even quite sure what to think about it, but it says, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul." And I've just wondered, like, how far does that go? Like sometimes I've been in the store and I would want like a chocolate bar, and I would just feel like I wouldn't have the liberty to buy this thing, to buy this. You know, like we live in such a nice country, but there's other people in other countries just suffering. How can I just go and buy a chocolate bar, you know, twice a week? Like, I don't know what all that entails of abstaining from fleshly lust, but in my own personal life, especially being young, like these are some of the things that have been on my mind. Or I remember like living in Arkansas, and I made pretty good money, and and I would pass by it. I just had that little white truck, and I would pass by, and I see a better truck for sale. And I just wonder, like, hey, I could have that truck. Like, I could do it. I could buy it. But then it's like, why do I want that truck? And I wanted that truck because I liked it, you know, to, like, abstain from these fleshly lusts that just war against ourselves, I guess.
Just appreciate that, Dan. Just a little comment to something you said, but I mean, it's not a big deal, but on that, where you said there in verse 7, where you think the author changes from believed to disobedient, a lot of the translations do say something like, you know, this precious value then is for you who believe, but for those who disbelieve, the stone which the builders rejected, this became the very cornerstone. I'm not a Greek scholar.
It has a totally different word.
Is it totally different? Yeah. I thought there seemed like a connection.
So the first one is, yeah, you guys, with English, you got to, even that thing I said about the, to the unbelievers, that word, the beginning of that word, I think, is the peace. It's not pistos, but it's pisto. It's peace something. Uh-huh. That has to do with fidelity, faithfulness.
Okay, yeah.
But it's used. Anyway, the point is that belief and obedience are like.
Yeah.
The
that's
word.
It.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, this one, unto you therefore, which believe, that's pissed you. To think something's true, and then, but unto them which be disobedient, that's 544, that's apatheo, to not allow oneself to be persuaded, but also means not to comply with. Anyway,
yeah.
Somehow he chose a different word. He didn't just put an un in there.
Okay, yeah, that's... Some translations render it that way, but I misread. We need him to untangle all that for us.
Somebody trying to make the point that they thought that the New Jerusalem was in the shape of a pyramid. That was their, the thing that they said, like, that's the only structure in which the chief stone is also the cornerstone. Like on a squarish building or a cubish building, you wouldn't call it. Doesn't seem like you'd call the cornerstone the chief stone, but that's just English. It's just one Greek word that just means the stone above all other stones, or the most. It just means the most important stone. And the English people said chief corner, but it's not. Anyway, sometimes you can trust it. You just trust it. Choices of the King James guys, and you try to build a case on that so you get yourself in trouble.
The Master has come and he calls us to follow the track of the footprints he leaves on our way.
And dangers and sorrows are true.
Then we shall